You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we will be talking about chapter 9 from the book 90 Day Soulmate called Creationism, where we delve into spiritual science. The book itself is, of course, 90 Day Soulmate, which you can find on Amazon, amazon.com. In any case, today's program, which is called Creationism, we'll explore how thoughts and beliefs can shape reality. This chapter underscores the power of words, the profound impact of upbringing, and the significance of selective evidence and observational limitations in our perceptions and life outcomes. We uncover strategies for manifesting desires, improving life quality, and finding one soulmate, if that's what you choose. This journey invites you to understand and harness the transformative power of your mind and your beliefs.
Mm-hmm. It's for create your soulmate.
Soulmate. But it can be used in any aspect of your life, whether it's business, whether it's something you're looking to do for improvement. We'll talk more about that. But the concept of creationism, the belief in the power of thoughts shaping of reality. So when you write down your wants, you put in motion the forces of nature. When you are emotionally connected to your list of wants and you believe that you will find your soulmate or whatever your target is, you are programming your subconscious to automatically look for matches. You will now find yourself attracting a reality in keeping with your thoughts. Modern psychological research supports the notion of visualization, which will enhance the goal achievement process. It's pretty neat. So we talk about the vision board you had. It was even prior to the process of finding a soulmate. But that was more of a life journey board, right? It had companies on it that you wanted to do business with, type of house, maybe a little bit of romantic stuff too.
Yeah. How you lose light too.
Oh, how I look like, even before you did the rest of the process.
Yeah.
Interesting. So visualization is very important, and we'll get into why. What is the manifestation process? Develop, write, focus, and act on thoughts. The law of attraction in action. It's aligning beliefs with reality. Also, psychological studies show the benefits of written goals on performance. There's a psychological aspect to that. You can create your own reality from just your thoughts. We believe that. First, you develop something in your mind. Next, you write it down on paper. Now you focus on the details every day. Soon you will find yourself automatically taking action that supports your belief. You will see things around you that you hadn't noticed before that are in line with your objective. Does that work?
Yeah, and also these remind me when I finished my university. And the university has some kind of best practice that I like. So almost the last month that you become to graduate, the big director of the university have one class. And this class, he requests that we have to fill up our resume with 5 years in the future.
Okay.
So you have to put the day is 5 years in the future, the address where you live in 5 years, how many language you speak, what kind of course you have, how many master degree you have, and what is your experience in working in different companies in these 5 years. So I was so fascinated to fill up this, and we have to send, this is part of the your graduation, and they may be tracking if you go by this path. For me, that's interesting because also the area that I supposed to put my address, I moved in this area, the one beautiful mountain, you'll be there. The second language, the master degree, so everything is something that you write and you send. It's almost like that you feel your commitment that you need to achieve.
And it's something that you must have been at least thinking of focusing on, but now that it's written down, it's we talk about that there was a lot of brainwashing going on in wars from years ago, where they would have prisoners of war write stuff down, even if they didn't believe it, in sympathy with the other side. They were to, you know, get special food if they would write that I agree with the opposing force, if I agree with their country or their culture. Even if they didn't believe it, as long as they would write it down on paper, they would get special food. And this started making them start thinking about the concept of, well, maybe this other country that we're at war with has something good. So it's brainwashing in a negative way when you talk about war. But when you say, this is what I want, and I'm writing it down, it creates momentum towards that object because now you're focused on it. We want to talk about the relationship between language and creation in various beliefs. Have you ever heard the expressions word became flesh and or spoken into existence? These terms apply to religion as well as New Age philosophies. Why? Why do they do that? Because that is how the universe works. An inventor starts with an idea in their mind and then develops reality to fit the idea. The idea first existed in their mind. They defined it in detail, wrote it down, they believed it to be true, and it was just a matter of time and focus until it became reality. And if you hear these stories about Tesla, where he would have these dreams of things, he would envision things, write them down, and then try to discover them. So he discovered them, they existed in his mind, and then he had to figure out how to make them actually work. So there is that journey from an inventor's standpoint, from inventing an idea and bringing it into reality. Linguistic relativity suggests language can shape our thoughts and actions. Words have power to build or destroy. Spiritual and emotional weight of language is very important, is that when those are congruent with the words, if we spiritually and emotionally believe in what we're saying, psychological research supports the impact of language on mental well-being, and that is self-talk, positive things that we say, things that are beneficial to us, that when we have these self-talks, words are powerful, words carry equal weight with matter. Words are of the spirit. Mm-hmm. Words are of the soul. Choose your words carefully. And nowhere is this even more important than with children. Yeah. So you would think that the words we use, and this is where, when I got to this part of the chapter, I'm like, this is really important. Words are important to us at our age, that we put the right words into our own mind, right? We are now choosing the words carefully that we want to use, what we want to use daily, how we want to interact with people. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, shouldn't there be some kind of research that shows how important words are to children? What parents speak to the children, how they interact. And so that's the next thing we look at here. We look at childhood affirmations. So childhood affirmations, positive affirmations shape children's expectations and reality. The deep impact of repeated positive statements help a child in the long term. Studies have shown that early positive reinforcement can boost self-esteem and academic performance. What I thought was very, very interesting about that. A child that grows up daily being told they are smart, strong, and kind will typically grow up with that belief and expectation in their life. They usually end up creating a reality that fits with their beliefs. We know that, if you've ever heard these things, well, how much is environment, how much is what you're born with? Yeah. You can see studies that say 70% is environment. And you see other studies that say 70% is what you're born with.
Yeah, the DNA.
Right. Well, the point is, if you don't have an environment, then it falls on the DNA. And if you have a really strong environment, then it falls on the environment more so. If they hear positive affirmations from a young age, they do not know anything other than this repeated certainty. So it's being repeated. They're developing. It's like when you teach children in school to write, when you teach them math, when you teach them these subjects from an early age, it becomes their framework, their reality, their brain structure, and how they go about their life. These truths are burned deeply into the programming, right, of the children, and will stay with them for some extent for their life. You know, some a little bit more, some a little bit less, but they will. You could conclude that kids from good homes have higher starting points in life and do better. Is it because they were given positive programming? Of course, we have all heard of a child that has been told negative things, been in a bad environment, but still goes on to be successful. And they say, oh, you see, you have individual choice. Yes, some do. Some are able to be successful despite that environment and that upbringing.
Yeah.
But the more positive we can make that upbringing, it is shown that the more greater good we do. Where else are we here? Oh, here we go. There's a link between good homes and positive childhood outcomes. Makes sense. Negative impacts of adverse childhood experiences are prevalent, and research underscores the significance of nurturing environments in child development. That is all true. So we talked a little bit about the exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen exceptions, right? There's an exception to every rule. Children that prosper despite their negative environment, and children that self-destruct even though they were brought up in a really good home. And it doesn't actually matter the really good home. Like I know people I grew up with that they had very successful parents, and they had this beautiful home, and they lived over here, but they turned out to, for whatever reason, you know, some people, oh, they were spoiled, or, oh, they had it too easy, and then therefore they didn't have to struggle and work on their own to achieve anything. You know, you can go through all these reasons. There's part of that could be that reason. Part of it is we're just all born with a complete diversity of personalities that's impacted by the environment, but not 100% determined by the environment, right? So psychological resilience explain variances in child's responses to environments. With all that being said, we're going to talk about a couple of studies on childhood development when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim
after this.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about creationism, or we call it spiritual science.
Co-creation.
Co-creation. It's where the words we use, the thoughts we have, determine who we will become eventually, the direction we go in. We will also talk about some of the concepts of what that enables us to do by having this internal language. So let's talk about some of the studies. We talked about having a couple of studies on words and how that impacts children. Let's talk about, first, there was a study done, and the result of the study is that screen time negatively impacts parent-child interaction. The study encourages a language-rich environment for development of a child. So what does this actually mean? It means that there was a study done with 220 families where they checked on children at the age of 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, 30 months, and 36 months of age. And they followed them through these 6-month intervals, and they looked at how they interacted with technology and how they interacted linguistically with the children. What they noticed with an increase in screen time, meaning the more that the children use technology, and they call this technoference or technology interference in development, there was a decrease in the measure of parent-child talk, but also a decrease in the depth of what they talked about. There was a reduction of adult words. The children's vocalizations, actually having interactions and talking, were reduced. And conversational turns, meaning going back and forth, interplay between the parent and child, was reduced. The conclusion of this study is that screen time is creating interference with young children's opportunities to talk and interact in their home environment. The study then encourages promoting a language-rich home, which will then in turn help the child to develop their vocabulary, use more complex words, have better conversations, more in context and depth. The next study, childhood conduct and communication. The role of parent-child interactions in emotional socialization. Link between behavioral problems and socio-emotional language, and the importance of enriched language environments in mitigating conduct issues. Parent-child interactions are a critical pathway to emotional socialization. When you disrupt these processes, it creates risk for childhood behavioral problems. That skills, this study did two different types of games. They had the kids play games. They had one that was more of an interactive game that was more social-emotional, and then the other game was more math-oriented. And the result of that, they found that the context did not moderate the degree of correlation in cognitive or mathematical word use between parents and children, meaning that if one was more in a verbal type of game versus a math-oriented game, it didn't moderate how much the conversation went between the children. Mm-hmm. But what they found were those children with more conduct problems used fewer social and emotional words in the social context. And then there were children who were called callous and emotional, and they had fewer cognitive words in both the social verbal game and in the math game, meaning the kids with the most problems had the less interaction, the least amount of interaction with the parents. So they were looking at how the games impacted that relationship, but what they found was that the ability for the parents to interact with the kids in those games was an indicator of behavioral problems with the children. So those that had better communication with the children had better behavior, no matter what the game was. So the game was just a straw man.
Yeah, the tool for work, but it's really no meaning in the...
The game, it didn't matter that they had the game. What they were looking for is the behavior, the interaction, the behavior of the children, and the interaction communication style.
And also, I read some a study about the best way the children or the human start to, you say, the increase the word in your speech,
yeah,
and also identify specific the word for your feeling. So when you really identify, or the child identify, I feel sad, I feel angry, I feel excited, I feel tired, so and know exactly the word and maybe have a better combination, is more healthy for communicate with the parent. If you avoid this kind of identification of the feeling and put the word in the feeling, it's start to become a problem.
And you've jumped right to our fourth study, but that's good. That these things are being shown is that the ability to use the words, to be able to discuss emotionally how you're feeling, that actually, if you can do that as a child, you then end up as an adult who is more able to be emotionally intelligent, who has...
Who knows? Because sometimes the child is more smart than father.
What I'm saying is that if you have that good relationship as a child, the study shows that when you're in 20, 22, 24 years old, you then have higher self-esteem. You have an ability to recollect emotional context and discussions with your parent. Mm-hmm. You're able to have more intellectually deep conversations. And it's shown that that starts off as when you're a small child, is being able to have that development as a small child. This one, the third study, and we'll get into the fourth in a second, the third study is about phonological network development. This is the learning of language, the different sounds in language, how they're used, the importance of environmental language for vocabulary growth. So meaning having actual language in your environment as you're growing up. And the development follows, lexical development follows a rich get richer pattern. And I want to stop there for a minute, because this is what we're talking about when we're talking about self-actualization, and or when you're putting something down on paper, that the rich get richer. It doesn't mean you're going to get wealthy, but what it means is if you want to build on something, you need to lay a foundation. And what they found in language development of children, those who were exposed and used more language at one point in their life, then therefore had even further growth, and expansive use of language in a certain amount of time later, that it built on top of each other. It was not only a level that you had was an indicator of the future level you have. But it wasn't only yourself, but it was also being in the environment. So I was going to put this into two things. One is, when you focus on a subject, when you focus on knowledge, it allows you to have a foundation to build more of that knowledge. And two, when you put yourself in an environment that utilizes the language and the subjects and the information that you're working with, it also gives a secondary function of increasing the likelihood that you pick up new words and expressions, especially when you're hanging out with people who have the same hopes and desires and dreams that you do.
Yeah.
So it's not only your own self-work, but it's also taking advantage of an environment with like-minded people. And this has to do with growth. But if you're saying, I'm looking for a soulmate, then you do this work and you put yourself in an environment where you meet like-minded people in that environment. So it's the same whether you're trying to improve your life or improve your relationship. So I thought this was very interesting. Let's continue on here and go memory talk. And then finally, this comes back down to the fourth study, which Lizette kind of started to talk about, which was positive impacts of reminiscing on children's development, correlation with higher self-esteem and emotional regulation, shows the prospective effect of parent-child conversations on development. What this actually, and this is a bad summary, that the frequency of parent-child reminiscing conversations in childhood is a parameter of positive child development. So children who have talked to their parents more frequently about past experiences have higher emotional regulation skills and self-esteem in their future lives. Secondly, higher volumes and richer emotional content in future memories, meaning the exposure to these emotionally deep conversations with your parents allowed an increased development in emotional connection with other people.
Okay.
So like for me, I didn't have a lot of really in-depth emotional conversations with my parents growing up. In fact, because of some of the things that happened in our life, we kind of cut each other off for a little while. And because of that, now I meet Lizette many years later, but my emotional connection to how I feel and being able to express that, I would typically just clam up. I'm learning this right now as we're having this discussion, by the way.
It's a co-creation.
So we're learning this now. So the exposure to something new early on helps develop further growth in that area. And again, we talk about neuroplasticity. We talk about when you're a child, how quickly your brain grows, and then the neurons and the synapses, they just go all over the place. They go crazy. Well, they still do that at our age, at anyone's age, is that you can still grow in those areas. So if you want to be more emotionally connected to your partner, you have to start somewhere. Even if you start really small, and you just, if you say, I like, I don't like, and then you can put another word on it. You know, that you have to start from somewhere, but the more emotional content you are able to discuss, how you're feeling, you start to be able to discuss it more deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So these child studies are exactly what we're saying is you are the parent of yourself right now.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, your subconscious is a little child. It wants to grow in the direction that you do self-talk. So the whole thing about this self-talk is you are now your own parent. You don't have to listen to your parent to tell you how great you are, or how good you are, or these are the areas that you're strong in, or these are the areas that you want to focus on. That you tell yourself that now. You're responsible for your own positive self-talk, your own direction.
I like that.
So the whole point of having these child studies is to show how applicable they are to us as adults, now that we're in charge of our own futures.
Yeah.
Is that interesting?
I like it.
You do. Now we have self-responsibility in personal programming. The concept of positive brainwashing or self-brainwashing, we talked about that. You can choose what you focus on, what you want to be positive about, what you want to focus on. Psychology supports the influence of self-directed thought on reality, that our own thought and what we're thinking about day in and day out will change reality for us. Now that we're no longer children, we are in charge of our own programming. You may call this sort of a positive brainwashing, like we just said. One where you, or we, each of us, are in control. We can choose our new direction, focus on achieving our new reality, and we will find that things will start happening in line with our vision as if by magic. And this is where that spiritual concept comes in, is that we're creating something that through just our connection with the physical realm, which may be on some spiritual level as well, is that things start happening that we can't explain. We start recognizing things we didn't recognize before because we've laid a foundation of what we are to focus on. It's as if these things are happening by magic. But it isn't magic, it's science. Psychology and life show us that this happens and works, and we could even call it a spiritual science. And so we've coined that phrase in our book, 90 Day Soulmate, Spiritual Science, as this, if you want to call it self-actualization, if you want to call it manifestation, if you want to call it brainwashing, whatever you want to call it, It's you could be just saying, I am my own adult.
Mm-hmm.
I am in charge of my growth, my future. We had this conversation, which was kind of interesting. Our kids, today's society is so in tune with so much information. In fact, they have so much information at their fingertips. They can tell us what's good and what's bad, right? They have this social understanding that maybe we didn't grow up with. They have the greatest opportunity to change their own lives from a perspective of, this is where I am, this is where I want to go. And a lot of times, and I know this to be true of many people, people tend to be more critical of others then let me do something, let me change my life, let me put myself on a path of doing a greater good. Many people want to stop you from doing something rather than start themselves to do something positive for everyone. And this information age is so powerful, where people who are good with computers and phones and talking to all their friends, because a lot of today's, did we talk about this at one point, that we grew up really as individuals, like we lived in a house, and if we wanted to connect with somebody, we'd have to get on a phone or get together.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
mm-hmm.
there's more of this social consciousness now, where everything is being broadcast out to 200 friends, and it is almost like this collective mind. So there's much more interconnection today, where that's great for being able to understand things. It actually sometimes seems to stop people from taking control of their own life and making a difference, making a change, and moving forward. In a society that has the most opportunity for the most benefit, for the greater good, for the most people, we sometimes are stopped by having too much connection.
Yeah.
Going back to technoference, we are having technical interference in our lives. Oh, when we come back, we'll talk more about everything on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about creationism or spiritual science. We were talking about how we are now the adults in our own lives. We can talk to our subconscious like it's our child, and we can do positive brain talk, positive brainwashing. We can do visualization, and we can manifest what we want in our lives. It takes some work and it takes some effort, but we have the ability to lay the foundation for our future growth. We want to talk about two things. Well, we want to talk about lots of stuff. We want to talk about an infinite amount of things. But two things I want to bring up is selective evidence and observational limits. There are two things called the selective evidence is a phenomena where we tend to confirm our beliefs. And the second, observational limitations are based upon our understanding. Psychological theories of confirmation bias and selective perception. Selective evidence is the tendency to find evidence that supports our theory and subconsciously filter out evidence that doesn't support our theory. So if we only know, if we have a thought about something, we're only going to find evidence that supports that. Stuff that doesn't, we're going to either disregard or devalue. Mm-hmm. And if we actually recognize that, we may see more information that we can use, learn from. Mm-hmm. The second piece of that is observation limitation, that we only can recognize things that we first understand. I'll talk about what that means with some examples here. So let's talk about a good example of selective evidence. When people having physical symptoms originating from mental or emotional causes, like psychosomatic illnesses result from the influence of the mind over the body, especially with respect to disease. You know people who think that, oh, I have this pain, they look it up on the internet, they find on the internet it's this, and now they think it's that,
and
now all their symptoms get even worse, that match up with everything they just read about on the internet.
Yeah. And also, this is something that these people don't believe is true. But I say other evidence is when some pharmacy testing some product, what do they do? They do some kind of, what is it called?
The placebo?
The placebo, yeah. And the real for group to see what happens.
And the placebo almost always has some effect.
Yeah.
So you can get the placebo effect, which we all know is true, that if we believe we just took the right medicine, we can actually start to feel better. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of our illnesses that may be anxiety-based or mind-driven or internal chemical-related, you know, I have indigestion all the time. Well, you just took a pill that fights it. Oh, now I'm relaxed. I don't have indigestion anymore.
Yeah.
My nerves have been reduced. Mm-hmm. So some of these things, of course, this doesn't work with everything, but this is one. The other is the impact of beliefs on perception and behavior. So going to back to the patients, like us, these patients have the power to convert thoughts into reality. They may find a disease that aligns with a single symptom And so they read more about the disease. And as they conduct additional research and learn more about the disease, they subconsciously create, find, and exhibit even a greater number of corresponding symptoms. Eventually, they develop the framework of an illness through their assumed symptoms that is clinically identifiable. But when the doctor tries to say that the cause is emotional, these patients seek another doctor or they seek another argument to support their truth. They filter out any other theory or information that is not aligned with their beliefs. So this is one that we talk about medical, but we do this in all aspects of our life, whether it's religious beliefs, political beliefs, what we believe about cars, what we believe about women or men, that we have beliefs and then we only see things that fit those beliefs. The other was, here is observational limitation. So it's the inability to observe without prior understanding. So you have a limitation. If you don't understand something, you don't observe it. Examples highlighting conceptual comprehension's role. I'll show you something in a second here. And cognitive psychology supports the necessity of schema for perception. All right, so we were talking about this just before the show. What do the numbers 1, 4, 9, 16, and 25, and 36 have in common? They're numbers. 1, 4, 9, 16, 25, and 36 are all squares. They're squares of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Many people know that. So many people know that off the top of their head. But there are other people who don't. They don't, those numbers have no meaning to them. They don't have that relationship to that. And we could go on and on there. I know some formulas for stuff from engineering that I know, and if I see something in reality that matches that formula, I see it, I recognize it. But to try to explain that to somebody is very difficult. I sometimes have a challenge in trying to take something that I understand because I've had, you know, years of experience working with it and working with the definitions and working with formulas, and then you see it and you're trying to explain it to somebody who's actually working with it that doesn't have that background, and they think you're nuts, like, or you're wrong. It doesn't work that way. We can only recognize, again, if you recognize that 1, 4, 9, 16, 25 are squares, it's because you were taught that. If you were only a certain age and you didn't learn multiplication yet, and you didn't learn square tables or square root tables, you wouldn't know that. And then when those numbers appeared, you wouldn't be able to figure out the pattern. These are just representative of things we see in front of us in our life. So if we know a lot about cars and engines, then we may understand that a car that has two tailpipes is a certain type of vehicle. That if it only has one tailpipe, it's probably a four-cylinder. You know, that if it has two, maybe it's an eight-cylinder because it has two mufflers. And I'm making this up. I don't know.
It was more fancy.
It's more fancy. It has two mufflers. Yeah. It's a fake muffler.
Exactly.
It's an electric car with mufflers. Why?
And sound.
With sound. Why does it make that noise? Oh, because we like the noise.
Yeah.
But when you recognize that, it's because you know something about it, and somebody who doesn't recognize it, not recognize it, somebody who doesn't know about it would not recognize the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what else we have here? We have observational limitation in different languages. Oh, can you read this over here for me here?
El punto es que usted no puede observar lo que usted primero no entiende.
So.
What are you trying to say?
I don't understand, baby. I don't understand. It's not my first language.
Okay. It's my sandwich.
Is that what it says? It's not my sandwich?
It's not my sandwich. Say in English, please.
I don't know what it says in English. El punto. The point is I can't understand something I first do not understand.
So, exactly. The point is that you can
observe
something that you don't understand.
First. So that's what it says. So it actually says you can't understand something. You can't observe something that you first don't understand. So listening to Spanish or seeing Spanish for me, where it's slowly becoming a little bit more understandable, at least I go, it's Spanish. for many people, they may see this and they may not know what language it is, or maybe they hear it and immediately, like, I don't understand any of the words. Or the other one, I love this one, and Lizette doesn't so much, but, you know, she'll be talking with a client and someone will say, I don't understand because of your accent, and then 20 other people in the room will tell that person exactly what she said. So it is potentially that what she said wasn't understandable because she's asking a technical question, but they blame it on something different because they don't understand it.
It's okay. I leave these every week.
Every week. The interesting thing about language, just like math, is these are things that once you have a foundation in, you can grow and grow and become an expert in that area. That would be like anything in our life. Continuing on here, learning and observation. So to some people, math, patterns, languages, certain subjects are not understood, and so as they appear before us, we cannot observe what they mean. Our minds automatically reject or may not even see information based upon our ability to comprehend it. Like somebody who goes to a foreign country and starts driving in a car and they come across a street sign they've never seen before. A blue sign with a single line through it. And is that no parking? Is it don't enter? Is yeah. it, what is it?
No use blue
don't
line.
Use blue don't use blue balls. I don't know. What does it mean? We talk about soccer is one of the things I talk about sometimes is that when I used to coach soccer and had 10-year-old soccer players, when this was like typically their first year playing soccer, and so you'd go, okay, we're going to play soccer, and you'd put everyone in position, like, okay, you're forwards, you're midfielders, you're fullbacks, you're the goalie, okay, and then you put the ball on the field, and they'd all run to the ball, because they don't know the game, they don't know how it's played. Then you have to explain the positions, and then they start going, okay, I understand the position, I stay here, I should do this, I can pass to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to understand where the ball might go. And so as a soccer player myself, I learned to not only understand where the ball might go next based upon where people were on the field and who had the ball, but I used to also be able to make the ball go where I wanted it to go by giving a little bit more room to allow them to make the pass. But knowing I was doing that on purpose to get them to make that pass so I could suddenly move in that direction. But if somebody is new at soccer, they're not even close to doing that yet. And so here you are trying to explain, you know, here I am as a 40-year-old person back then, explaining to a 10-year-old how you can make the ball go where you want it to go so you can intercept it. And they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? So that is the where we are like in some of the subjects that we are involved in. We are like that new soccer player that we know this much. And in relationships, that could be where we are a lot of times.
Like you always say, we don't have any school training course about relationship. Our life, we know math, language, geography.
Yeah,
but we don't have relationships.
Well, geography so much, but math, math and English, sure. So we go to school for math and English, but then we try to have a relationship for our whole life, and we may never have a job that uses that much math.
Or read a book or something about
right.
that.
Yeah. Or we never read a book about relationships. So here we are to try to suggest that doing what we've done and, quote, wrote a book on relationships, it's helped us
yeah.
develop our relationship. Everyone out there should write a book on relationships.
Yeah.
So we're saying.
I'm using that, by the way.
Oh, using the 90 Day, the Right Now book, which mm-hmm. is a book we have out on Amazon as well, which will take you from head to red, meaning from take a book from here to print within 90 days. It gives you tips on how to do that and shows you step by step what was needed to do that, again, on Amazon right now.
Mm.
So let's go back to this. Here we go. We want to align our beliefs. So for spiritual science in relationships, we want to align our beliefs and behaviors with the desired outcomes. Self-observation, we always talk about, is very important in personal development. And again, psychological research on cognitive dissonance and belief alignment, meaning we want to align our actions with our beliefs because our actions can't be misaligned. If we have certain beliefs, certain thoughts, our actions will want to come into congruency with that. So when you start putting down on paper what you want to do, where you want to be, who you want to meet, who you want to be with, what kind of activities you want to be involved with, and you keep thinking about that and you've got your vision board, and every day you kind of just walk past and go, oh, yeah, I'm remembering these things I want to do. What happens is that automatically your actions start falling in line with your thoughts and beliefs. The importance of belief in achieving desired relationship outcomes. That we also have to watch out for self-sabotaging phrases as barriers to fulfillment. Research on the effects of self-talk on relationship satisfaction and self-concept all match up and parallel what we had before with the child studies. Mm-hmm. That positive self-talk on relationship satisfaction, on talking about how good our relationship is, how I want to have a good relationship, how I'll do things that will move us towards a good relationship, all that self-concept and self-talk will result in a better relationship. Some people say there are not enough men or women for me to find someone, or all men or all women are the same. Why bother? Well, or the other one. Oh, it's better to be single anyway. A lot of times, because people don't put the upfront work into who they want to be with and put themselves in the environment to be with those people, they end up just getting involved with the wrong people again and again. And therefore, since they're getting involved with the same wrong type of person, they go, oh, all people are the same. No. All the people you are meeting, all the people you are putting yourself in front of, all the people that you are showing interest in are the same. But there's, 3.5 billion people out there. I'm sure one of them has to be different.
Yeah, or more than one.
More than one. Maybe two. Two could be different. Let's continue on. And since we're almost at the end of the show here, I think we're going to go right to our fun. Here it is. Our fun slide. Our fun slide is our final slide, and it is the four-step plan to build your future, whether it's with a relationship or whether it's just building your own goals, meeting your own objectives. One, acknowledge and overcome selective evidence. Understand that there are biases and there's a potential for selective evidence in your life. You have the power to create a new foundation of understanding and recognition. Two, you need to address observational limitations. By expanding your knowledge base, you can recognize patterns and opportunities that were previously invisible to you. This can apply to all areas of your life, including relationships, work, and personal growth. Three, implement principles of spiritual science and creationism. Reflect on the principles discussed today of spiritual science and creationism. Use these as tools for manifesting your desires into reality. Start by clearly defining what you want in various aspects of your life, including your relationships. Use visualization techniques and positive affirmations to reinforce your goals and align your subconscious with your conscious desires. And finally, four, strategic approach to finding your soulmate. Clearly define the characteristics you seek in a partner. Focus on what truly matters to you. Remove your observational limitations by clearly identifying new characteristics of the partner you seek. Engage in activities and environments with those that share your interests and aspirations. And again, that goes for any goal you have. By incorporating these steps into your life, you can move forward with a more open, aware, and focused approach. This can improve your overall well-being, help you manifest your desires, and increase your chances of finding a fulfilling relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any other thoughts that you have for today?
No, I just say that everybody, if you have a discipline and a step, can achieve what it...
Discipline,
yeah.
Steps, interest. Have fun while you do all this.
Yeah, that is important too.
And you will, whether it's by yourself or with another or with friends, walk to a brighter future together as you are following your goals. Mm-hmm. Again, you are treating your subconscious as the child. Your conscious is the adult telling your subconscious what you want to focus on, what you want to get, what you want to achieve, who you want to be with, and what you want to be doing as you move forward in your life. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim. See you next week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.